And my approach to cybersecurity messaging and marketing is really simple. And that is, nobody buys a shovel, they buy the hole that it digs.
Hello, and welcome to Identity Today. We're taking the noise out of tech talk, bringing together the best minds in the business to chat all things identity, security, biometrics, and more. I'm your host, Blair Crawford. Today, we're talking about the trials and tribulations in marketing in the cybersecurity industry. I really hope you enjoy the chat.
I think it might be worthwhile to take 1 minute to discuss security.
Welcome to the show, Nathan. Great to have you on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So we're going to get stuck into cybersecurity marketing and all the challenges that face organizations who are trying to break through the noise right now. But before we do that, like we like to do, let's get the audience a bit more familiar with you, not necessarily in your professional context. We're going to ask you some quick fire questions to get us started. So now that we're all traveling again, what is the food that you miss most from home when you're moving around?
So I'm going to answer the exact opposite of this, because my wife had made the transition from keto, being all carnivore all the time, to a vegetarian. So the amount of steak that I eat is directly proportional to how much I travel. So when I'm traveling around, it is like steakhouse, steakhouse, steakhouse. So I will answer it as, I guess the only thing I miss is anything that isn't steak. Because I get that most at home, and I only get that when traveling, so that I miss anything but steak when I'm on the road.
Okay, fair enough. So wait, so you move from, so she, now she eats mostly meat, but she was a vegetarian?
No, the other way around. She's a vegetarian totally now. So she was the one where we got like the smoker grill, because she's into like the, you know, doing Traeger. Smoked pulled pork and everything. We got the Traeger, got all that. Yeah. Now all abandoned, all vegetables all the time. So when I'm home, I get no steak. When I'm on the road, I kind of overdose on it.
Yeah, my partner's vegetarian. When I'm on the road, I miss eggplant the most. I'm not. all right, next one. Where do you get your security news from?
I get it from everywhere, but I will give one great tip is if you read TechMeme, TechMeme's an aggregator of tech news sites,
yep.
But they also have it by category. And you can look at a stacked rank list of the top security news sources. And so I subscribe to everything that's on there, but I also just keep a Feedly subscription that has all of my RSS feeds from all the security pubs. And that's what I check every morning.
Yeah, I use Feedly, but I've not used TechMeme. We'll, for everyone as usual listening, we will add the sources into the episode notes. TechMeme, that's a good one. I'll have a look at that myself. So if you have a bucket list, what's number one on it?
I don't, but I'm going to make one up right now on the spot.
Let's do it.
You know, I've got a list visiting the pyramids very, very high up. I'm one of these guys where when I'm cooking, when I'm doing anything at home that doesn't involve like actually talking to a human being, I got something on the background. I'll be watching one of those like, you know, the Nat Geo or Discovery Channel shows about the pyramids and ancient Egypt and all that stuff. It's definitely high on my list to be able to make the transition from what I see it in my mind and actually looking at the scope of it in person.
That sounds like a good plan for 2023.
Maybe 2024.
That sounds like a good plan for 2024.
Yeah.
What would your spy name be?
So this is a great question. And my answer is, if I were a spy, I would never answer this question.
Mm-hmm.
Because as someone in security and that's ultra paranoid, I'm not going to tell you the street I grew up on. I'm not going to tell you the name of my first pet. I'm not going to give you images that you can use on Facebook to uncover anything. So my spy name is one that you'll never find out.
Yes. It's probably the best answer. People are just like, yes, this would be my spy name, blah, blah, blah. Like that could be a double bluff though, or a triple bluff when they give me it straight up. So I don't know.
Yeah. What street did you grow up on? Who was your first teacher? What was the name of your first pet? Yeah. Ask all those questions and see who answers them.
See who answers. All right. Last one. What subject could you talk about for hours?
Well, hopefully it's cybersecurity and hopefully it is building a brand. I think those are things I'm like absolutely super, super passionate about, and ask anyone on my team. I do talk about those things for hours. So yeah, I just really enjoy building. I enjoy creating and I enjoy trying to solve a puzzle. And I think what we do in cybersecurity, what we do in marketing, what we do in branding is trying to create something out of nothing and doing it in a way that gets above the noise and gets people's attention. So I love it.
Sounds like a good segue into getting some more background onto your kind of professional experience. So you are Chief Marketing Officer at Axonius. go into a little bit of detail about your background and what you do and what Exonius does as well.
So this is my fifth startup. It's my third cybersecurity startup. It's my third cybersecurity startup with three guys that knew each other from the Israeli military. And in each case, first time CEO. So I guess I'm pretty good at pattern recognition, but I love the early stages. This company, Exonius, I've been here 5 years. I was the first US employee. I joined before we had a product. We now are the third fastest growing company in North America. We're the fastest growing cybersecurity company, and we have about 650 employees. So we've gone from zero to a $2.6 billion valuation, hundreds of customers worldwide in less than 5 years.
Congratulations. And so
it's been amazing. It's been a wild ride. It's been a lot of fun. But to tell you what we do in a nutshell, you know, the first day I joined Exonius, I was talking to a CEO of a very, very, very large company. And I said to her, so just tell me how many assets you have. And line went dead. I was like, I guess she hung up on me. And then 45 seconds later, she just starts laughing. I'm like, what the hell just happened? She goes, I have no idea. And if someone tells you they know how many assets they have, they're lying to you. And I'm like, wait a second, though. You spend tens of millions of dollars on security products, right? So you're spending all of this, but you don't even know what you're trying to protect. She's like, no, I don't. And no one does. And so what we're trying to solve is this idea of asset management for cybersecurity. And the idea is pretty simple. If you can tap into all the sources of data you have that know about assets, by assets, I mean endpoints, mobile devices, IoT, SaaS applications, you name it, you already have the data that tells you about these things. If we can tap into that data, we can show you what you have, we can show you where there's gaps, and then we can automate remediation, automate action to address those gaps. So that's what we do.
When you get into that, is that similar to the history you had previously with your other startups? Because I remember when we were talking before, you had, what was it, 3, 4, 5 businesses before?
So 5 startups, 3 cybersecurity. So the first cybersecurity company was at a company that was like one of the first CASB solutions. So okay. We started off, we were like, what are we? Are we like DLP for Google Apps? We were just trying to figure out what it was. It was before there was actually a term for it. The company's name was Aprigo. I rebranded that to CloudLock. We got acquired by Cisco. The second one was Hexadite. So we were one of the first like SOAR vendors, and Microsoft acquired us. We only existed for 1.5 years before Microsoft acquired us. Yeah, I mean, these three have been in security, very different places in security. So one really around cloud security early days. The second one, mostly security operations, incident response automation stuff. And now at Exonius, trying to solve this big problem around the issues that cybersecurity professionals face when they don't have asset management right.
Within the context of marketing and your journey marketing products in this industry over a course mm-hmm. of X amount of years, yep. Is it different now trying to sell a product in cybersecurity than it was, let's say, 10 years ago?
I would say the basics are the same, the noise is greater. And what I mean by that is this. I think we all end up doing this, which is at the very beginning, a lot of security companies, they just are trying to say, feature, 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 feature. And if you build an amazing tech, the world's going to knock down your door and buy it. That wasn't true then. It's less true now, right? I think one of the things that you see is walk through RSA, walk through Black Hat. There are hundreds of booths around all claiming to do something that is noisy and unclear. And so I think over time, the amount of noise has increased dramatically, but also the amount of vendors saying that they're all doing the same thing is causing it so it's really hard to stand out. It was easier in the past, like 10, 15 years ago. If you had a clear message, you could stand out. As time goes on, there's almost this race toward everything being a commodity. And when you're a commodity, you can only really compete on price and volume. So yeah, I would say it's definitely harder to break through. And there's a lot of noise out there. The number of vendors that were there 10, 15 years ago was a lot less. And also, imagine you're a chief information security officer right now. Could you imagine how many people are attacking your inbox or trying to get your attention or calling you at home? Like, it's got to be really, really difficult out there. So it is very, very hard to break through, because everyone's going after the same people with basically the same message, regardless of what they have.
Yeah, I mean, I think that chief information security officer vendor fatigue thing is real. I mean, I'll get pitched and our team will get pitched. I'm sure you get pitched all the time. Someone could have the best offer for me at a point in time, but it would not resonate because of how many pitches you get. And that, you know, I've been able to substantiate it in 15 seconds. So it's really good when someone does get me and they absolutely nail an opening or they nail an email and they've done their research and they hit a sweet spot. And it's like, cool, you really do stand out and amongst all the people who will just fire some random message. But do you think that, because there's an inherent conflict, right? Because these people who are selling and marketing us, there is a conflict in what we need as vendors versus what the market requires in many ways. Do you see that? Because they're just, you know, they're trying to do their job. Vendors are trying to do their jobs. We've got great tech. You've got a problem. What is going on with that? Because the volume is so high with vendors right now. It's very hard, I would imagine, as the market to pick the right vendor at the right time without spending, you know,
yeah,
weeks.
No, I agree. But I think the other side of the same coin is just think of how much time and effort is wasted, right? So think of it both ways, right? So I, as a vendor, I want to only talk to people that are qualified and that actually care about what I'm doing. And you can split it into care about right now, trying to solve right now, and care about for the future. We can talk about that. But what percentage of conversations that our sales teams have that we're having with people are just a total waste of their time and our time? And I think that's the same feeling on the other end. As let's say I'm actually trying to solve a problem. I go to a website and it seems like it would solve my thing. And I talk to someone, and after I've wasted 4 hours, it turns out this isn't what I want at all. Right. I think there is so much waste in the system that to me is the biggest challenge, is like, how do I not waste your time and my time? And I think you would feel the same. Like, how many conversations before showing a demo could be ended with, wait a second, is this really what you were interested in? Or did you think it was something else? Does this resonate at all? No. All right. Well, why don't we just like stop it here? Instead, it's all right, I'm going to plow through this slide. You know what? Insert first name here. I'm going to ask this question here. Do you see value here? Well, do you see it? Insert name here. Like, it's just all predicated on this idea that as long as I plow through these slides and say the same thing, that I'm going to get to the end and I can check the box and I've done my demos, and it completely like is devoid of reality of, was it quality? Did I waste their time? Are they ever going to come back? And I think if we were able to get rid of all of that waste, it would help our reputation. It would help us to say, like, you know what? This isn't for you now. Maybe we get back together in a year. But nobody does that.
There's definitely a bad habit with that within high volume sales teams, very transactional based approach, yeah. Just smashing through.
Well, the goals are wrong, right? So I see this at every level, right? So I've worked at companies where the whole goal of marketing, and this is why you see it at every trade show. Like, you see somebody out there, I'm going to scan your badge. And I'm like, no, I'm a vendor. They're like, don't care. My goal is numbers, right? And so you got the first wrong goal on marketing's end. The goal is number of people, not qualified people, number of people, right? So you start off with this huge number. Marketing saying, hey, I did a great job. I got you 10,000 leads, of which, who cares, 0% are relevant. And then you hand it off to sales. And sales is saying, all right, the next goal on the BDR team is how many meetings we set. Is it how many good meetings? No, how many meetings we set. Cool. So now we go to the second level of wrong incentives. Then we get into the gamesmanship on, is this an opportunity? If so, what stage? If so, what number? And now we're screwing up our percentages. So like every single thing in the system is predicated on misalignment of priorities and goals. And that's what wastes everyone's time. And if just imagine if you could spend more time getting better data, like better research, actually finding out if someone, like, you know, what team they like, where they live, what, like actually building a rapport like a human being. I mean, things would change drastically.
But not what street they live on.
Well, of course not. And their dog and their first grade teacher.
Let's talk about KPIs for a minute. Like, you just went through there what they shouldn't be, but what should we be KPIing marketing and sales teams on to have much better outcomes that you just described?
So for me, the biggest KPI is pipeline, right? And I look at it a couple of different ways, whether it's a sourced pipeline, whether it's converted pipeline, and not marketing versus sales versus BDR versus whatever. But in the end, all I want to do is answer the question, are the things that I'm spending money on proving value, right? So for example, if I'm spending money on field events, what percentage of those are actually turning into pipeline? Because after pipeline, I can't really do anything. I'm like, you know, I'm not actually selling, right? So if I can get a beat on being able to create pipeline from all these different sources, and I know that there's a difference in sources. So for example, a large enterprise account, if it takes 12 months or something, then I only can do a few of these things and impact revenue right now. But I also know that there are certain things I can do right away. So to me, it's pipeline and build backwards and understand the all of the conversion rates by segment, by channel, by geo, by whatever, and then build backward to those tactics that source that pipeline and those that can convert those that are already in the funnel. If you focus there, everything else kind of sorts itself out and you can really understand if I've got to cut money, it's here. If I'm saying I can double down because we have excess capacity or we're overshooting our goals, now I know where to put it.
When it comes to sales, and obviously you're chief marketing officer, and that's the main focus of this conversation and content, but how integrated is marketing or should marketing be with sales and sales with marketing? Because, I mean, I have my own opinions on this, of course, but I still see so many vendors separating, you know, this is sales and this is marketing. Whereas I think the most harmonious commercial team should be fully integrated sales, marketing, pre-sales, and then strong connections into product. But what's your opinion on it, and how do you run your business?
You've got to be as close as you can possibly be without doing each other's jobs. And I guess the way I think about that is, so when I'm talking with our SVP of sales, I'm trying to understand where are the conversion rates changes. And when I look at going into this year, where are we going to put our net new ARR goals for each region and each product? How are we going to understand how that relates to we're seeing these conversion rates across the funnel, right? And then I'm saying, given those and what pipeline I need to have set to close, like that's what I want to look at. And we look at that every month to understand what's changing, because the worst problem and the number one thing that causes a rift between sales and marketing is surprises. And it's surprises in, oh yeah, I forgot to tell you that we changed the way that we allocated quota across this segment. And now I'm saying, well, I got to know because I got to catch up to that. Or, you know, we found out after doing this call campaign that all the people that you brought us from this webinar are garbage. But I only found that out 6 months. I would love it if a sales colleague would come to me and say, you got to stop doing these things, they're a waste of time, because I would love to stop doing quantity and focus on those things that matter. So to me, like, you know, I would never say, hey, you should change this in your sales follow-up model. And, you know, you missed this step on MedPick. Like, I'm not going to overshoot there. Just like I don't expect my sales colleague to say, you know, what you're doing on your brand awareness campaign, I think you should look at iHeart for OTT instead of this thing. Like, we're just not going to do that. But I want to get as close to that line as you can without stepping over it. And I'm cool with stepping over it in a few cases to say like, oh, we just found our border.
Just, I want to look back to the noise problem for a second, but sticking within the context of both the sales function and the marketing function. How do you help sales navigate the noise, or how does marketing help sales navigate the noise right now? Like, so they don't just pick up the phone or they don't just send that email, that there is something more welcoming that they can actually have an opportunity to have a successful outcome on. Because everybody's trying to do this, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think the best way to do anything like that is not try to convince anything, but instead pointing to data, right? And I think too often we decide scale equals volume and volume equals you can't be creative or customizable. And to me, I'm cool with saying, go ahead, run that campaign where you're just going to make a million phone calls or you're going to do a million emails. And then let's look at that versus something that is much more custom. And then let's see what the outcomes are, right? Without looking at the data or proving that one works versus the other, then it's just me against you. And what's the point of that? So to me, I like trying a lot of different things. And one of the things that I did this year that I love is I created a growth function. The whole idea there is just a small function dedicated to experiments, of which we know 50% of them are going to fail. But for those other 50%, we can then put them into the machine and run that at scale. And I kind of look at the way that we work with sales follow-up the same way. Let's run a couple of smaller experiments. Let's do things that are industry specific. Let's do things that are based on title or persona. Let's do them super, super personalized. And I want to see the result of that versus let's just do a volume thing and blast through a bunch of numbers from Zoom Info. And let's see what works. And the answer is probably somewhere in the middle. But if you approach that as a partnership, as a some percentages are going to be more generic and you're going to go after volume. But like, I think the ratio might be off. And as long as you can do that together, I think it always works out. And then it's not me against you. And it's just, we're all approaching this because we want the same outcome.
You have an example of an experiment? What do you mean by experiment in terms of marketing and your growth function? One that's worked and one that hasn't worked.
Sure. Yep. I'll give a couple of examples. So one was, and these sound simple, but wouldn't have got it any other way. One was looking at a single step form versus a multi-step form. So let's think about that. You come to a page on a trial signup form, and in one case, it's 8 or 10 form fields just on one page. Now, you could think of this as, well, all right, it's a lot of fields, so maybe that's an inhibitor of form submission. But on the other hand, it's like, but this is only one step. Versus another one is 2 fields and you see a 1, 2, 3, and 2 and 3 are grayed out. Now, I could say that, well, at least I know what I'm getting to, and saying like, it's only a 3-step process. Okay, so which one is going to win? And then you look at the data and say, well, wait a second, which one is the winner? And you kind of back into, oh, I see. Well, if it's 3 steps and I don't know what step 2 and 3 are, this seems like work. Yeah. So maybe I'm not going to do that, versus it's all right here in front of me. I can just submit it. It's not that much work. And the other part is, if someone isn't willing to fill out 8 form fields, do you really think they're committed to activating a trial? So it's probably a good way to filter those out. So it's things like that that we're trying to do with this growth function. Things that our digital team and our demand gen team aren't going to be able to do because they're trying to do the bigger campaigns. But those things that can really move the dial, and we do them in a way that we drive enough traffic there to test it out and figure out which one's the winner. And then we fold it into the rest of what we do and then move on to the next experiments. It's a very small team. It's like 4 people, and it aligns to the stages of the funnel. So it's acquisition, conversion, and then customer marketing. And so that's exactly how we do it, is we look at what experiments are we going to run in a quarter or a half of a year? How are we going to do the evaluation criteria? How do we fold that into everything else we do once we find a winner?
Yeah, that's a good example, because it makes me think of like the step 2, 3, when you can't quite see how much work is. It's like when you do one of those comparison, like home insurance type things, it's like free quote. And then it's like, but before they do the free quote, you've got to tell us everything about your existence.
Yeah. Exactly. You. And like a lot of e-commerce sites will do the opposite, where they hide the fact that you got to put a credit card in, and it's such a sunk cost. You're like, I've already spent 10 minutes on this.
Yeah.
If I knew there was a credit card, I'm not going to do it. But now it's like, I've already done all this work. Here, fine.
I bet you hate them a little bit for it as well, though. Of course. So you end up with annoyed customers who feel like they've been sucked in on the very first interaction with you.
It's all about the digital psychology, right?
100%. So you touched on trials there. I want to go to that for a second. Why do you think it's difficult in some circumstances for vendors to implement trials across the industry, and specifically within cybersecurity?
Yeah, I think there's a few reasons why vendors avoid trials. One is that in some cases, there are products that are really high touch that don't lend themselves to a trial. There's just too much work that needs to be done to get it up and running in the right way. I mean, this is why we have professional services and SEs and people that like really try to get the POC stood up and the evaluation criteria. So some products, like something that's got to be on every endpoint, it's going to be tough to get someone to deploy it enough to show enough value. And that's why you want to make sure it's like a really structured POC. Another example is something around data, where just hooking up to something might not yield the results that you're actually going to get in a real full-fledged POC. So that's another example. But then there's the other part, which is really just the attitudes, right? You have a lot of companies where, like you said in the past, where before there was this much noise and this many vendors, the whole idea was put a form on everything, make them go through a sales call because we can sell them something, right? Yeah. And so this idea of cutting out the sales team is a way of saying, well, we're missing out on an opportunity to get them on the phone and just try to sell them something I'm sure they got a line on them for. So part of it's an attitude thing. And I think part of it is just trust, right? We're going to be able to trust that the product does a good enough job without someone holding their hand through it. And either way, regardless of everything I just said, it doesn't matter, because all that's changing anyway, because the expectation is changing. If you expect you're going to be able to play with, to try to evaluate the product before you ever talk to a human being, then you're just going to leave instead of saying, oh, I'm going to play by your rules. I think There is no unringing that bell. We are moving to a world where everyone expects to try the product before they ever talk to a human being. And we might be dragging our feet in cybersecurity, but we're not going to change that. So all of that, no matter what excuse you use, I think trials will always be a part of software buying. I don't care what industry you're in. We'll go there whether we like it or not. And I think most vendors would be smart to find a way to do a trial, to get it right, to do in-app messaging, to really like put a very specific scope on what you can do and make sure that it's easy to get up and running. And then you can worry about, well, how do we make sure that it's qualified, or how do we make sure you find value? It's going to happen. There's no getting away from that, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. And I thought much more about it after the first time that we spoke. We had it as a, like, from our perspective within our business, it is a challenge to just have trials, because we don't, it's not a SaaS product. We have, you know, single tenancy per customer, and there is a whole lot that goes into at scale, you know, in terms of, because the client has a huge amount of options. They have, they choose their infrastructure, it's very tied into their authorization, you know, it changes their authentication mechanism across their business. So those connection points require thought and discussion to actually get the value out of it. However, I agree with you that there is, irrespective of whether it's right or wrong or best practice, to just offer trials. It is an expectation now that people want to try something.
Yeah. Well, just one point of distinction here is I don't think it has to be binary. I don't think it has to be either you sit through our sales call or you try the product unfettered with all access on your own. I think for things like you're describing, what I've seen start to happen is it's a free trial, but it's not your data, right? It's an environment that is proximate to what you would experience if you had it. And here's what's beautiful about that. Someone can interact with what the product looks like without actually having to set it up and do the configuration, whatever, and say, I use this, 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 and this. Cool. Here's what it would look like. Like having something that is really like it's like a structured demo. It's not their data. They don't have to connect it, but they can start to play around with and use the functionality of the product. So to me, it's the best outcome of any trial, whether it's a self-service trial or it's just using representative data, is how does this thing work? What would I get out of it? What is my motivation for connecting different data sources? What do I do next? Because what I want to have happen is, instead of the first call being, I'm going to teach you about this concept, then the second call, you bring somebody in that can bring in the data, then the third call and the fourth call, and finally, you can talk about what you're getting out of it. Instead that, you come to that call and saying, all right, so I understand this is what a query looks like. Can you help me understand the use case of bringing in an IAM and a cloud instance? Because how am I tying an identity to infrastructure? Like, that is a vastly different conversation from, so wait, is this agent-based? Like, how do I use it and how do I get value versus what is the thing in the first place? That saves everyone time, and it's a great filter mechanism on both sides.
Yeah, I completely agree. I suppose the thing I was going to get to as well is we figured out a way to get trials done in our solution. The team are going to be releasing it in Q2 next year. Our biggest, just for everyone listening and for you as well, one of the biggest inhibitors, because we are a biometric authentication company. So being able to give someone the ability to trial it, they have to enroll their biometrics. There have to be consent forms, the scope of use, which will be within their scope. But there's been a lot of work over the last kind of few months to be able to do that in a kind of secured sandbox environment, single tenancy. And after we've been through that, you know, is there value? Does this fix what you're trying to do? Is this a now problem or something down the line? There should be a very easy way now in about 4 months to be able to spin that up in trials. Because as I said, I thought about it a lot more after you said it. And as difficult as it might be to do something, whether it's a structured demo or in some instances, something that has to have a little bit more specificity to a particular client, like a biometric authentication capability, vendors have to figure it out. Like, the market wants to test things. You know, people like to push the buttons. They like to see
it. And you'll learn so much from it in ways that you couldn't learn any other way.
100%. All right. So we've agreed that the whole industry should find a way to do trials.
I mean, if they don't, people will move on.
Absolutely. So this last thing that I want to get into, it's probably a little bit harsh, but it's there seems to be a lot of messaging. You touched on it with the RSA. I think you said RSA. When I was there in April, I was looking at I'm looking up here, I'm imagining it. There was so many messaging that was just the exact same thing. And what I found hilarious, it was kind of like a Black Mirror episode, to be honest, because you had these huge stands and you had all these flashing lights, and then you had like 100 exhibition stations, you know, that focused on API security. And the only way that the vendors started to differentiate themselves was by having the best wrapper on their particular stand, or by having, you know, 50-foot transformers, or by having the best socks or the best t-shirts. And that is just not a sustainable or enjoyable position, right? And these things are all, I love socks. Everybody loves cyber socks now. But yeah, what is it that's so difficult? And what is it that's, I mean, do you like that messaging? Do you like these big approaches, these big flashy kind of look at us? Is that working?
Yeah, I mean, it depends. Like, to me, whenever I see somebody doing the same, I run away the opposite direction every single time.
Yeah.
Because it is all about standing out and being different. And just on the messaging side, you had mentioned, I think, before we got on about how I've got the RSA Innovation Sandbox poster in back of me. This was on our stand when we won in 2019. And when I was trying to reverse engineer, like, what are we trying to do here? And the answer was, how do we get something where people remember something about us? And if you know the RSA Innovation Sandbox, basically the idea is you have 3 minutes, that's all, to give the message of why you're the most innovative cybersecurity company that year. And then the judges go and they pick a winner, and we won in 2019. And I put two things in our presentation that stuck with people and they still say today. So one is that I said we're trying to solve the least sexy problem in cybersecurity, asset management. And then the second, I said that asset management is basically the Toyota Camry of cybersecurity. Everything else is like really flashy and it's like the Lamborghini or Ferrari, but asset management is really the Toyota Camry because it fits the most basic requirement for what you're trying to do. And so I can't tell you how many people have either sent me pictures of Toyota Camrys, have come up and said, you guys are the Toyota Camry guys, or, hey, you're that unsexy company, which, you know, is not the greatest, but they remembered it. And yeah. I think that's what you're getting to, is this idea of how do you stand out? And some people, when faced with the question of how do I stand out, it's I get flashier or louder or something, or try to get the best, I guess you said rapper, right? That's one way of doing it. And the other way of doing it is to stand out and just try to be much more direct and clear. So I always look at what is everyone else doing and how do I do the opposite in a way that is the most direct, the most clear, and stand out in a way that when they walk away and go eat dinner, they'll remember something about us. And that's how we've always approached that.
So find a way to be memorable without using...
Memorable and simple, and very, very simple. Because that's the thing. Everybody tries to, at their booth, they try to approach a prospect saying, so what do you do? As I want that person to walk away being certified in our product, being able to answer every question. No, that's exactly wrong. Make them remember one thing about you and have an idea about what you do, because very few people sign a PO at your booth. In fact, I've never seen it. But a lot of people will come back and say, hey, you know, I'm talking to my SOC team. Guys, I saw this thing that was like kind of cool. Can't remember exactly. Sony, I can't spell it. But research them. Something about Toyota Camry or something. Just look them up because they did something simple. Like, that happens a lot. Nobody is saying, I learned how to do XYZ with this feature and this. You're not going to remember it by the end of the week. Something simple that lets you remember the kind of ballpark that the vendor plays in is what you need to do.
Sounds like you should also be very relatable as well on the stand. Like, this whole idea, like, just a normal human chat.
That's it. Once I have that conversation and say, this is what we do, and they're like, oh, I was thinking it was this thing. Can it solve this? No. Okay, cool. Thanks. That works. People like that.
Every time I get in a Toyota Camry, I'm going to think about you guys.
I'm sure I'll be getting texts and pictures soon. And there's like four or five on my street. I see it every day. I'm like, why did I pick this?
I'm going to have to get an Uber in a moment as well, because I'm to get into the city for a meeting. And I'm going to... I'm probably going to get a Toyota Camry because it's one of the most popular. I'm going to go straight in, and I'm going to go to IT and I'll be like, I just got an Uber and I was on a Toyota Camry and I thought about this company. Like, for like, do we know how many assets we've got?
There you go.
All right. Any closing thoughts? Because I think that was a pretty good place to wrap up, actually. Any closing thoughts or messages on how to break through the noise if you are an aspiring or experienced cybersecurity marketer right now?
Yeah, this is the last thing I'll say, which is I put this on a slide back in 2017 when I was trying to figure out what to do next. And my approach to cybersecurity messaging and marketing is really simple. And that is, nobody buys a shovel. They buy the hole that it digs. And unless you're in the market for a hole, I don't care what size shovel, what color it is, what, it doesn't matter. So focus on that. Focus on the fact that they woke up in the morning, they got dressed, they had breakfast, they went to work, they came home, spent time with their families. The light still went on and they lived through their day without your thing. So remember that. The thing that you're selling is not going to completely change their life, but if you can figure out a way to fit it in there and make their life easier in a way that's human, you're going to be better than 99% of the vendors that are out there.
It's been fantastic to have your insight and to chat to you today on the show. Look forward to speaking to you again.
All right. Thank you.
That's all we have time for this week in Identity Today with me, Blair Crawford. I'd like to say a big thank you to our guest, Nathan, as well as a big thank you to you, our listeners. If you want to know more about what we do at Daltrey, head to daltrey.com.